Joining me today is Dr. Lucas McMillan, naturopathic physician and medical director of the Delbrook Integrative Medical Center. Dr. McMillan is back on the program. Welcome back, Dr. McMillan.
Hello and good morning, Christine. It's good to chat with you again.
Yes, so today's topic is living fully, naturopathic insights on health and allergy management. Can't wait to dive in. Now, it is allergy season, and some people have allergies all throughout the year, like myself. And my first question is, if someone comes in with allergies, how do you start? Like, where do you start with that?
Yes, so allergies is a very big topic. And it's not a distinct topic from other parts of health. So typically, we're going to go through a large kind of piece of the puzzle with the person to get to know how healthy they are and see what's working, what's not working. But the first question in my mind is, if somebody comes in with allergies, how do we know that they're allergies? And what are the chances they're actually dealing with something else? So, for example, I had a patient who came in who was absolutely certain that her issue was allergies. And over time, we discovered that much more likely it's related to simple reflux. Meaning she was having acids coming up into her throat. It was irritating her throat. It was creating a lot of phlegm and sensation to her that really felt like she was allergic to something. I've also seen singers and vocalists, probably public speakers as well, although personally I haven't run into that, who have an irritation that can feel and look very similar to allergies. So it's important that we take a look at the signs and symptoms of the person's feeling and be sure that we're looking at what we think we're looking at, so that the treatments have a chance to work. So some of the big giveaways that what you're dealing with, is this true seasonal allergies or is that allergic rhinitis is the more medical term to say that your nose is running, often comes with itchy eyes, and it's related to an allergic exposure. We want to be sure that you're having symptoms that are either directly related to the exposure in question. And if we know what it is, I mean, that's a giveaway. If you're allergic to cats, every time you touch a cat, you get an itchy face, get a runny nose, you don't feel like yourself, you're sneezing. Those are very easy slam dunk symptoms. We can be confident that at the very least, a big piece is causal to allergy. If you only have one or two of those symptoms, say you get itchy eyes and that's it, there is a long list of things that cause itchy eyes. If you have a runny nose and that's it, there's a long list of things that cause that. So step one is let's try to put the pictures, the pieces of the puzzle together. Thankfully, for most people, it does show up in a very clear and obvious way. So if you have runny nose, itchy eyes, and sneezing, very, very, very likely that's an allergic reaction. So that's thankfully most people fall into that category, and I suspect most of our listeners are going to be there. But I want to throw out that if you're getting bits and pieces of this further, if we don't know what at least some of the triggers are, we're less confident that's the issue. So it's still worth going through some of these processes, but keep your eyes open to other possibilities that might be causing what you're feeling.
Right. And, you know, further, like, what are some common misconceptions?
Yeah, so allergies is something that a lot of people talk about, but we like to isolate it from everything else. So, for example, allergies have a ton of overlap with other health conditions. So eczema is a great example. Eczema is a skin condition that we like to think of as only affecting the skin, but the likelihood of having allergies and eczema together is huge. Now, we actually have an even bigger relationship between allergies and the crossover between having allergies, having allergic symptoms, and something as simple as asthma is huge. So I looked into the numbers of this. Sometimes I actually dive into the research before we jump into topics to be sure that what I'm saying is up to date. And it's fun to actually show up. So in this case, 40% plus percent will also have that allergic rhinitis. So there's a massive overlap between a couple things. But I think a major misconception we have is that allergies is a standalone problem. And I think that's part of where we get stuck in trying to treat it. Because often I find where some of the biggest effects are and where people get the greatest relief is in looking at the compounders, things that aren't necessarily that primary allergen, but that are also irritating their system. So, for example, sometimes I'll do a scratch allergy test in person, And this is just one example of, we can tie this into things that people can do without medical treatment or assessment at all. But if somebody comes in and they're allergic to the cat or their dog or something that's very important in their life that they don't want to change their exposure to all the time, if we run a scratch allergy test, sometimes we'll find they're allergic to dust or they're allergic to grass or other things. I actually love when people are allergic to dust because that's something that's relatively easy to treat. If somebody is laying face down in their bed for 8 hours per night, that for most people, that's going to be one of the huge exposures they have to dust. So over that time when we're sleeping and we're supposed to be winding the system down, giving the body a break, we can actually be ramping up the immune system, worsening those allergy symptoms, and really priming somebody to be highly allergic to the cat or the dog. So things like putting HEPA filters into the room, helping to, say, change the covers over the bedding. I mean, if you can change your entire bed set, your entire mattress, there can be benefits to that, but you actually don't need to. There are mattress covers that are fully rated to help to lock in things like dust. And if we decrease the gradual exposure that people have throughout their day, not all of the allergens they have, especially big common exposures to things like dust, if they're allergic to it, that can truly have a massive difference in how they respond to their cat or to their dog, or to grass, or just to going outside. It's a very notable way we can decrease the severity, or in some cases, completely stop histamines, have people feel very comfortable being exposed to things that we otherwise thought with their big allergy.
Well, if you know that you have allergies and you are a runner or you do, you go for a hike, you're working out, is it best in your opinion once you come inside is to change your clothing right away and take a shower to get rid of the allergies, would you suggest?
Yes, the physical allergen, like say if it's pollen or some of the floating white stuff that we get very commonly here in Vancouver, 100%. Controlling the amount of exposure you have is a great trick. So getting it off of your body, getting it out of your face, and cleaning yourself off when you have a good amount of exposure is a great idea. Yeah, some of my cyclists, when they go out, especially certain times of year, they very much puff out. They very much have those large allergy symptoms. It's repetitive. It's something that we can reproduce, and we can be confident that's a big part of the issue. 100%. Actually, getting that off your body can be a benefit. Interestingly, there's sometimes other factors there. There are some people that have been, like I'll say, a less common response to histamine, where if their body heats up, they get allergic reactions. Sometimes that includes rashes or hives. Often it includes that sort of allergic rhinitis or seasonal allergy picture of what happens on the face, the nose, the eye, the sneezing. But sometimes the exercise itself is causing it. That's a little bit trickier. Still very much my approach in those cases is, let's look at the compounders. Let's look at other things that are essentially aggravating the immune system. In a perfect world, we'd do some kind of testing or an allergist, a medical doctor, some kind of testing, something to try to lay out as many allergens on the table as possible, because some of them are very often easy to fix once you know what they are. I mean, cats, dogs, if you have an animal or pet at home, they can be really tricky. But again, something like dust mites, or just having a HEPA filter that's in your room so that the place that you sleep has the cleanest air in the house. Overnight, you're exposed to less and less allergens and things floating through the air. You can actually have a significant impact. So trying to decrease the load coming from other places can help to free up things so you can go for that run and have less symptoms.
Yes, I mean, it's taking, these steps. But when Dr. McMillan, say, for example, you have someone coming in for the very first time, how do you assess it? Like, what are the steps that you take?
Yeah, so I love to, if people are open to it, I mean, we do an in-house scratch testing to get a sense of what they're actually allergic to, just to really narrow that down. Most of the assessment process is talking through it. When does it happen? When is it worst? When is it best? And then we compare that to the most likely things that people are allergic to. So those include, I mean, trees, grass, dust. It can be mold. I don't see this a lot, but I have had some people that we run an allergy test. I can figure one specific case. We run an allergy test to find that mold is very high on those. Mold isn't good for anyone, but if you're allergic to it on top of that, it can be a big problem. And they basically got a sniffer into their house, which is something that can, like a professional that comes in and does something for mold exposure and found that the mold that they had in their house, they didn't know it was there. But once they removed that, their symptoms, actually over the period of probably a couple of months, notably decreased. So it's super interesting that there's overlap on that side as well. But
Yes.
I always like to start with, let's be sure we know what we're dealing with, what we think we're dealing with. Let's be as certain as we possibly can be. And the next step is, what are people open to? Because frankly, sometimes people are open to less change on the allergen exposure. So if I love my cat and I'm allergic to my cat, I don't want to change my exposure to my cat. I'm going to be sleeping with it, thinking I'm going to be cutting it. I'm going to love my cat, have my cat love me. That's off the table. Fair enough. For some people, that is where we start. So in those cases, again, other allergies become more important. And that's where I do start to lean a little bit more on things like, what can we do to directly decrease that allergic response to the body? So we do have some tried and true methods that seem to help to notably decrease people's response to that allergic exposure. So quercetin's probably my single favorite. I can't make official recommendations to anybody who's listening to them to get diagnosed and treated, but I can say that these are products that are publicly available. And in my opinion, they're worth trying, assuming it's done so in a safe way. If you're unsure, certainly ask your doctor about it, because I can't make recommendations to people I have not yet met. But of the research-approved methods, quercetin is probably my single number one. Vitamin D does have some studies as well showing some benefits. I've found it to be a very small benefit to some of my people, but I do think it's worth trying, and I do think, especially if you live in Greater Vancouver like we do, the chance of people being truly vitamin D are relatively high, much higher than most people think. So I think that could be a really big, heavy hitter. Resveratrol is another very cool one that I've seen some benefits for. So all of these have some studies. I try to, especially for the purpose of the podcast and honestly most of what I do in clinic, I try to stick things that actually have studies behind them. That we have at least, of the studies that we have are very positive in showing that they can decrease the symptoms or decrease that allergic reaction. Probiotics fall into that. Curcumin fall into that. A couple that I've personally never used, black cumin seed oil or black oil. It seems like it can be of benefit, but I have been less to offer there because I've not personally used that with any of my patients. And cinnamon extract, interestingly.
Wow.
So, in other
It's
words, we have kind of a range of things that people can try. And the beauty of it is, you don't need me. You don't need to spend money on a practitioner to necessarily direct you. I recommend taking whatever steps are necessary to keep yourself safe. Generally, I would consider all of these things to be safe if used as directed. But I don't want to give information that's not appropriate for people that I've never met.
Right. And
Yes.
and look at your diet too, and like what you're eating, what maybe that might be something to look
Yes.
at.
100%. In clinical practice, unless people come in and they're very eager, to be completely honest, I leave some of the bigger dietary changes toward the end. Because as far as I can tell, the hardest thing for me to ask somebody to do is to change their dietary intake. If I try to talk somebody into being more active, I have personally found it to be a little bit easier than trying to recommend somebody to make a decent change for their diet. So it's different for everybody, but on average, I try to start with things that are a little bit simpler. But yes, there is some benefits. If we're just looking at overarching dietary recommendation, there does seem to be some benefit to leaning more toward plant-based diet, that you can have less likely allergic triggers and quite possibly less kind of low-level inflammation of the body, both of which lead to less allergies or less itchiness, less of the stuff that we really care about. So for a general overarching thing, there's certainly some benefits to that. Personally, I think there's a much bigger benefit to be found to find immune or allergic triggers that you're putting into your body. I mean, food's always going to be one of our greatest interactions with the world. Our skin, on average, is really good at keeping everything out. The digestive tract is designed to pull chunks of things in, to put it into our blood, and it's designed to directly expose it to our immune system. So knowing that, what we put into our body food-wise is very likely to have at least as much impact as the things that we're exposed to through our skin. So I 100% agree. If we're really trying to take away the load on the body, trying to identify what foods your body doesn't like is a huge piece of that. I believe we chatted about some of this in previous podcasts, but really quick, I guess, review some of this. We look at the exposures over time, and we sometimes eat food and sometimes don't. It's really hard to make those associations. If they're big reactions, they're easy, but the easiest way to do it is to have an elimination period where we cut out a number of foods that are likely to be an issue. Ideally, in my practice, I do a minimum of 2 weeks. It doesn't have to be super long, but give our body a full break from that food. We may or may not experience a difference. And at the end of that 2 weeks, we rechallenge the food again. So if I have somebody who just wants to do basic dietary changes and try to identify, we might take a look at things that we suspect are an issue for them. For some people, milk is an issue. For some people, eggs is an issue. There's kind of a wide variety of other foods that could potentially be an issue. But for a lot of my folks, those are among the top likelihood. I think most people are okay with milk and eggs, but of the foods that cause problems, they really are worth trying to see how your body feels without them. And most importantly, when you reintroduce that food, the day that you reintroduce it, that's your moment of truth. That's where you get to see how much of an impact that food actually has on you. Because you may or may not notice a change from that slow decreased exposure over a couple of weeks. But if you haven't had exposure at all and you reintroduce that food, you're much more likely to have a bigger reaction to that.
Dr. McMillan, what a wealth of information and educational. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think we've hit on some of the biggest topics that I really like to add on here. Those compounders really are an undervalued part. I wish there was a little bit more conversation around that, that if you have trouble eliminating your exposure or decrease your exposure to an allergen, sometimes that, like I said, really is a heavy hitter. Supplements do work. Trying to find the one that works for you can be tricky, so there is a trial and error in this, but I have a number of people that they're really proven to change their quality of life to try these things. If you're really stuck, there's something called sublingual immunotherapy, which is an actual exposure to the allergen at a very low dose that gradually increases over time, where we can essentially desensitize your body to that allergen. It does take 1 to 2 years to fully kick in, so it's a very slow process. It's something I certainly don't lean too heavily on, in my opinion. It's kind of a last-ditch effort. But again, if you're really wanting to snuggle up to your cat and other things aren't working for you, I'd really consider that. I do think antihistamines have their place. If you need them regularly, I really think in most cases, we're not doing things right. There's better ways to do it. But occasional use of antihistamines, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. And if you're really struggling, seek help. I would say don't be afraid to safely experiment because that is a part of the process, getting to know what your body likes, what your body really doesn't like. Allergies are one very clear way of our body saying it doesn't like something. Identifying that one, two, or maybe three things, it's usually not alert allergy to everything. It's usually one, two, or maybe three things. If we can identify those, we can make life much easier, and we can tone them down with some of the dietary changes, especially the triggers, sometimes using supplements, and the last-ditch efforts, antihistamines, and that's something you will have to.
Yes. And for more information, where can people reach out to you?
Yes, I'm at the Delbrook Integrative Medical Center. So our website is delbrookintegrative.com. My personal website, drleekmack.com. I try to release more and more info on both, especially on the Delbrook Integrative website. Well, we do have some more information on how to take care of yourself, on general health tips, and some more specific health tips as well for a number of people. And we're always available for a chat. So you can certainly come take a look at the clinic in North Vancouver. We'd love to meet some of our people. And in the meantime, just keep taking care of yourself, keep listening to podcasts, and knowledge is power. It's really good to understand your body and how it interacts with the world. So, thanks for letting me be a part of that. I absolutely love talking about these things, so it's good to get the word out.
Yes, and knowledge is power. And thank you so much for being a guest on the program. And I'd love for you to come back, Dr. McMillan.
Thank you so much, Christine. I'm sure we'll see you again sometime soon.
Thank you.